Hey, I'm Mike.
Hey, I'm Ethan.
I watched the first half of O Canada.
I watched the second half of O Canada.
And this is the other half.
Canada month!
Eh? Hello, everyone, and welcome to July. Now, I know everyone knows that July, you know, me and Ethan, we're both Americans.
Yeah.
And July is well known for being
the 4th of July.
The 1st of July is Canada month.
What?
It's Canada Day.
They got before us.
They got in before us. Yeah, I know.
Those northern neighbors, how dare they? How dare they? Coaching in our month. They claim independence a little before us,
That's
think.
Right. Probably. So we are celebrating.
Probably. We don't know a lot about Canada.
Celebrating America's hat. Hopefully we learned a bit more about
That's
Canada.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah.
And not just like, oh, instead of being like, I'm going to Hollywood. It's like, oh, I'm going to Quebec.
Quebec or
Montreal.
Montreal or
Vancouver.
Vancouver.
Or Toronto.
As a viewer of Canada film and television, what experience do you have watching Canada like stuff? Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie.
Yep.
That's a big one.
Trailer Park Boys.
The TV show. I've seen My Winnipeg, which is a great film by Guy Madden, another great Canadian filmmaker.
Most things are shot in Canada. Does that count?
A lot of stuff.
A lot of things are shot there.
That's a great one. What's it called? Scott Pilgrim takes place in Canada.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one. Yeah,
there you go.
That's a good one. That's a good one to set in Canada.
But yeah, you're right. Most of it's shot in Canada for like New York and
for New York,
Chicago and other places.
Anything. Philadelphia. Any place that doesn't want to give you a tax break.
Yeah, exactly.
They go to Canada to shoot.
Oh, Heated Rivalry?
Heated Rivalry, yeah.
It's Canadian.
One. I've not seen that, so I don't know.
It's very gay.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I've heard that.
You're right. Yeah. And then also Letterkenny. It's another Canadian.
Oh, I've heard the name of that.
Yeah, it's a very Canadian.
So not a lot.
Picnic Face?
You're making up things.
I am not. Do you remember? Oh my God. You know what Picnic Face is. You've heard of Picnic Face. I've never watch Picnic Face stuff.
Power Thirst. I don't know what any of this is. Oh, Psycho Gorman. Love that.
Psycho
movie.
Gorman.
Love that movie.
Oh, that's a classic. I love Psycho Gorman. So we got some mostly comedies.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think this movie's full of laughs, this film.
Oh, yeah. It's a laugh a minute, brother.
It's so funny. It's not even made by a Canadian.
No.
None of my movie takes place in Canada at all.
Really?
Yeah, none of it.
It all takes place south of the border.
It's all in America in my half of the movie. It's directed by Paul Schrader, written and directed by Paul Schrader, the guy who made Taxi Driver and one of my favorite movies, First Reformed. Incredible film.
Yeah.
He made this movie.
He loves movies about men sitting with existential crises.
And narrating it.
Yeah. Sure does.
Yeah. It's got Richard Gere in it.
Richard Gere
from
Pretty Woman.
Hachi.
Yeah, that too. That too. Movies, you can check those both out on the podcast.
Yeah. The Mothman Chronicles. Mm-hmm. Jacob Elordi.
Jacob Elordi. I didn't expect to see him here.
Yeah, playing a young Richard Gere.
Because this is a movie that came out pretty recently. So, you know, I mean, you can't get Jacob Elordi. He's kind of a newer face.
I think he wanted to work with Paul Schrader, I think.
Probably.
I think he was excited
He's
to work
a legendary
with
director. Right?
Writer-director, yeah, exactly.
And writer, true.
Yeah. I loved this movie.
You loved it?
I loved it. Okay. I was so fucking... I was like... Paul Schrader, I don't know about this guy. I didn't like how the opening fonts were in the credits. I thought they were bad. I had a lot of things I wasn't a fan of. And then I was like, this movie started fucking going. And I'm like, man, Jacob Elordi's really good. Like how it was shot. Like, you know, they have tons of flashbacks, some in black and white, some on film.
I do like that you can tell which era we're in because there's multiple flashbacks and multiple eras.
Yeah.
And because of either the
aspect ratio
or the color grading.
Yeah.
You could tell.
Or the fact it was shot on digital or film as well.
Yeah.
I love that. I was like a big fucking fan of this movie.
Okay. I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
I think for me, at least in my half, it kind of became, like The Father a lot.
Oh, right. Because Richard Gere's losing his brain.
He's losing his brain a little bit.
He's
so he starts
old.
Getting a little wild. It reminded me a little bit of that. And I'm like, if you're going to do a dementia movie, like that's like the fucking code of dementia movies.
Of dementia movies.
You know,
I always forget about it.
Real? Wow, you didn't see the end of it.
I'm just kidding. It's a joke.
You're a funny guy. You're fucking joking over. Oh, Canada. Oh, Mike. But anyway, it's, you know, I mean, I think it's well shot. I think it's beautiful. I think a lot of the acting is really good.
Yeah. It's, everyone's really good.
It's just very
mannered.
Very heady.
Oh, yeah. It's very, dealing with some heavy shit.
No, heady.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Heady and heavy.
Yeah.
Because it's dealing with a guy who's sort of like, it's great. He's surrounded by people who are like sycophants. You know, it's just like a wife who loves him and like three or two students who look up to him. He's like a very well-regarded, award-winning filmmaker, photographer, whatever.
Documentarian.
But he is so self-loathing. And like the whole movie is basically just him going like, here's who I really am. And like they all want to know about his like career and like him being essentially like a draft dodger, a resistor to the Vietnam War. He doesn't give a shit about any of that. He's just like, here's who I am as a person, mostly the bad. Like, you know, the shit that has like stuck with him all these years. And now he's looking back.
I think for me, the tough part was I didn't know exactly who everyone was. Like, I was able to pick up the key people. Like, I know his current wife.
Emma.
Yeah. Played by Uma Thurman. I know him. I know
Richard Gere.
I know Jacob Elordi, a version of him. But everyone else was just kind of a mystery to me, unless they were introduced in that moment.
Right.
So like, I didn't know anything about the documentary crew I was filming him.
Yeah.
Except they're kind of weird.
Yeah, and then also all of his ex-wives.
Wait, what?
Well, let me tell you.
Well, they're in it. They're in. I mean, I guess they're probably in your half.
Yeah, they are. But I assume that they come back in your half.
I think they're mentioned.
His children. He's got a son.
That happens. Yes. Like, we do see a scene where his son goes and meets him.
Yeah. Cornell is his name, I want to say. Yeah. I don't know who plays him.
I didn't recognize him. I'll look him up real quick.
Okay. But
go ahead. Why don't you talk about how this movie started?
The movie opens. We see the documentarians arrive. We're introduced to Malcolm, Diana, and Sloan. Malcolm is the guy from The Sopranos.
Okay.
He's also in The White Lotus. He was in like season 2 of The White Lotus, and he's also a voice in Shark Tale.
important.
Very important. And Diana, who's his wife, and Sloan, who is like a student of theirs. And Leonard, the main guy, who's played by Jacob Elordi / Richard Gere, was their professor who taught them like filmmaking and documentarianism.
So the guy who played Cornell was some guy named Zach Schaefer.
Never heard of him.
Yeah, he's not. I looked up his IMDb. It's his number one film was O Canada.
Well,
he was in Salt as a CIA officer.
Oh, dude, really?
Yeah, I know.
Dude,
big role.
That's crazy.
I love the CIA officer.
Big fan of the CIA officer in Salt. One of the many. So they arrive at this like old house and they're sort of preparing for the interview. And we learn that Leonard Reif is. You know, he's a famous documentarian and he's being interviewed by them. I wrote down bad opening credit font. I wrote down movie begins narrated by Leonard's son. And he's like, I did not see my father before he died. I arrived a week later or something like that. He says, so already we know that Leonard dies.
Okay. So that's the intro is because I kept seeing like most of the time it was narrated by
Leonard.
Richard Gere himself.
Yeah.
But then after a while, it started being Cornell, and I was a little confused by that.
Yes.
I thought it was Jacob Elordi, but no, it's Cornell.
Cornell. And this is a great bit. Like, it's kind of crazy, because I was just hearing, like, Richard Gere, he's not been in any movies ever. And he really hasn't. Like, he's kind of been in anything.
Bit.
This came out, I want to say, like, last year. I was meaning to see this movie.
Right?
2024, yeah. I've been meaning to see this movie, because I do like Paul Schrader as a director.
We're in 2026. That was 2 years ago.
Go fuck yourself.
Well, actually,
I
want to correct you. It's 2 years ago.
No, it's fair. But yeah, I did.
Guess how old he is?
He's got to be like 70 something.
76. Good guess.
Hey, not bad.
Looks
not
pretty
bad.
Good for 76.
He looks great.
I was like, oh, he's in his 60s or something.
Yeah, he looks great.
Yeah.
He looks rough in this, but he's wearing.
Well,
like,
yeah, I mean,
he's wearing makeup.
He meant to look like he's dying.
Yeah. And the first shot we see him in, he's in bed, and they pull like the blanket off him, and he's wearing a little diaper. And I'm like, damn! Imagine being Richard Gere. Richard Gere from like you know Pretty Women and Runaway Bride and Chicago and Hachi. You know, you're a hot fucking hot ticket item. And it's like, I'm going to return to filmmaking and the opening scene that you see me in is me wearing a fucking diaper.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's rough.
So rough like Hachi.
Yeah.
So Leonard, I wrote down, is belligerent and is followed by Emma, his former student and his wife, who's played by Uma Thurman. And Malcolm is like, hey, this is Diana, my wife, and this is Sloan, our assistant. Sloan doesn't really know anything about Leonard. She's just sort of like their student, basically, mm-hmm. and like there to help film. And they say, we're going to ask 25 questions all about your filmmaking career and you avoiding the draft. And Leonard's like, no, that's not what this is about. This is a testimony, he says. This is him. He's like, this is me talking about what my life was, basically. Mm-hmm. So like, tell us about your childhood or whatever. And he's like, 1968 Virginia, the poisonous flower first bloomed. And we learn about his second marriage to Alicia.
Okay.
She's pregnant. And they're in Virginia. They're living in Virginia at the time. They already have a child whose name is Cornell, the boy that we see.
Oh, he's already there.
He's already there.
Running around.
He's like a kid. He's in like a what is it? What's it called? What'd you put a baby in?
Bassinet?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's right, but I always like the term bassinet because it reminds me of Basset Hound. And I like dogs.
I'm a big fan of dogs as well.
Yeah, they got the big floppy ears.
It's like called the you put the baby in the crib.
Crib. Yeah, that's different. Yeah.
So I wrote down gorgeous film photography rather than the awful flat digital photography from the modern day scenes. And it's kind of crazy. Like it's a thing that you think is like obvious, but I'm like, you know, you see a movie shot in like flat digital photography and I just take for granted because so much fucking god awful shit is made for Netflix. You're just like, oh yeah, that's just like how movies are supposed to look now.
Well, that's also the thing is that like, was it confirmed that it was shot in film? Or do you think it was just digital that just made to look like film?
Even if it was.
Like, that's the thing is it just looks better.
It looks good. Like they're making
intentional lighting choices. Yeah, it doesn't have that Netflix kind of flatness.
No,
yeah.
They had like color timing to it and like weird light, like color like lenses. And I was just like, damn, fucking Christ, this is incredible.
I feel bad people put shit on digital because I think digital's just like the cheaper
version. No. There's nothing wrong with digital. You can edit it, make it look good. It's just, there. This is what... Like digital meaning like soulless, like cold. You know?
You put the default filters on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's so good. So anyway, Leonard listens to pregnant Alicia, like the baby inside of her belly. Mm-hmm. And then Alicia's dad's like, hey, Leonard, I want to have a conversation with you. And at the time, Leonard's like planning on moving to Vermont to teach at a college. And Alicia's dad's like, come on in here, have a drink and a cigar. We're going to chat.
Okay.
And here's the thing is Leonard hasn't told anyone that he's been asked to stay teaching where he currently is. He wants to leave. He wants to leave Virginia and go to Vermont.
Why?
Doesn't want to stay here because he doesn't want to be near Alicia's family.
Oh, okay. I thought it was either racism or something was going on.
That too. Alicia's dad and his brother give an offer to Leonard. They're like, hey, we know you want to move to Virginia, but if you stay here.
Vermont.
Thank you. We know you want to move to Vermont. Sure. You're right. You want to move to Vermont. If you stay in Virginia, we're going to give you a CEO position at this new business.
CEO?
Yeah. We're going to make you the CEO of this big business that's already doing well. Basically just like setting you up to succeed.
You know, if you did that, you wouldn't have to dodge a draft then, right? Because you're CEO. You're pretty important.
Yeah, but then he's like, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't be able to like teach. And Leonard and Alicia's dad's just like, every great writer did something for their day job. You know, and they like he lists a bunch of different writers and what they did for a living before that. And so it was like, you'd be in good company. Like, you don't have to, you know, you take this job, it'd be easy money. But it's also revealed that Alicia's dad had hired a private detective to look into Leonard before he married his daughter.
Okay.
And it revealed that not only was he married before, but he also had a child with someone beforehand as well.
Another kid beforehand.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Do we know his name or their name?
I do not. No, okay. Heidi. Their name's Heidi. It's a little girl.
Okay.
And then Leonard's like, can you give me like a week to decide? I want to go to, you know, Vermont. I want to check it out and then I'll come back and I'll tell you what my decision is. So he leaves the room and then Leonard walks into the room that he was just in with Alicia, but it's not Jacob Elordi. It's Richard Gere.
Mm-hmm. They do a lot of that where
it's so cool.
He walks in. It's like, it's black and white. Here he is. Yeah.
It's so cool. So Richard Gere walks into the room and lays down next to his pregnant wife.
Mm-hmm.
And in the mirror behind him is fucking Jacob Elordi.
That's cool.
It's so cool. It's so cool.
Ha. Audience. Mike loves a mirror shot.
Ah,
a special trick mirror.
I know.
Loves a trick mirror.
I'm a big fan of a mirror shot, everybody. It's so cool. I'm like, damn, that's so awesome. It's right in the center of the frame. It's so good. So he sits down. He's talking to Alicia. And he's just like, I don't feel like this is right. He's just like, you know, like, Alicia's like, isn't it tempting? And he's like, no. He's like, if I worked here, I would be dead in my mid-30s. Like, I'd drink myself to death. Like, I wouldn't want to do, I'd be depressed. And Alicia is repeating similar sentiments that her dad had. Like, you know, if you stay here, you don't have to, like, give up writing. You couldn't write. And then this will give us, like, money and security.
Just phone it in. This CEO position sounds very easy.
That's what she literally says. Like, my dad works 5 hours a week. Like,
okay, I would fucking take, like,
but
you could even part-time teach at that moment if you're only really working.
I know, but Leonard doesn't want to be tied down to, like, a stuffy white-collar office job. Okay, and so even though it means security, we cut to a black and white scene where Alicia is talking to Leonard about how she talked to her father. And her father is just like, Leonard is an unstable person. And Alicia's like, I want an unstable person. I'm in love with an unstable person.
I want an unstable person.
Yes. Okay. And then the very next day, Leonard is dropped off at an airport. And then we get an over, like, we got Cornell's narration earlier in the movie, and then we sort of forget about it. And then when Leonard is dropped off at the airport, we get Cornell's narration again. And he says, And we see Cornell in, like, the car, like, looking as a child, looking at Leonard entering the airport. Hmm. And he says, he was wearing a yellow jacket, and I didn't see him for another 30 years.
Damn. The yellow jacket makes me think of the yellow hat man.
The yellow man.
The yellow hat man from Curious George. And he runs away.
From Curious George. Curious
George, and all he has is the hat.
You ever see that movie?
I forgot there was a movie. No.
Oh, yeah. With Will Ferrell.
It was animated, right?
It was animated.
Never saw it. Did you watch it?
No, I never seen it. I read the books, though.
I love the books.
Oh, so good.
I love monkeys, dude.
Of course you do. But Curious George isn't a monkey, is he? Does he have a tail?
No, he's a chimp, but who cares? Who cares?
But they call him the Curious Little Monkey.
Maybe he's a monkey. I think he does have a tail, actually.
Does he have a tail?
I'd look up Curious.
Look up Curious George.
I can't believe I'm looking up Curious George in the middle of O Canada.
O Canada, O Curious George.
There's no place farther away from monkeys than Canada.
I feel like I don't see him with a tail, but this might be like a Mandela effect.
Yeah, I don't see no tail here.
Yeah, I think he's a fucking chimp. No monkey.
He's a chimp. Yeah, I ain't no tail.
Curious George, the curious chimpanzee.
Exactly.
Fucking asshole.
Anyway, he's a monkey to me anyway.
All right, anyway. So then, as all this is happening, it's revealed that Leonard left his son. Somebody says, can we stop for a moment? And we cut to modern day. No. And Sloane goes up to, powder Leonard's nose. And Leonard can smell Sloane, which is, Sloane's like a young girl. She's like a young, like,
She's the one with the hair. She's got a lot of hair.
She's the one with the hair.
Yeah, she's got a lot of hair.
She has a very thick French accent. So Leonard can, like, smell her, and he's like, oh, she smells like youth. And then he's like, I wonder if she can smell me, old, covered in shit, all my medicine, barely alive. And it really feels like Paul Schrader just, like, writing about himself.
I know. I feel like that.
and then Emma is not in the room. And Leonard keeps, I don't know if this happens in your app, Leonard keeps asking, like, where's Emma? Where's Emma? Where's Emma? Like, even if she's right there. But Emma's not there. And then Emma comes into the room, and she's like, sorry, I got, like, a text I had to take. And it's so funny to me, because it's like, that feels like such a Paul Schrader move, where it's just like, I had a text, and you need to take it outside. I'm like, a text is, like,
you just take it there.
Just take it there. You don't need to move anywhere. You don't need to be on the phone. But
now they're doing voice chat. They're doing a voice message.
Voice memo. But Leonard's like, you need to pay attention, Emma. This is important. He says, this is a gift for you.
It is very funny, because that's how a lot of old people think of, like, their old knowledge. Like, yeah. I gotta tell you,
this is very important. But this is his, like, current wife.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's like, this is the man you've been married to all these years. So Leonard says, how old are you, Sloane? Someone's like, I'm 24. Is that French?
That's pretty close.
All right, thanks. And Leonard says, 24. Imagine being 24 and ruining your entire fucking life.
Oh my God. Oh my God, dude. Chill out.
Everything good has already happened to you.
You're 24. You could change everything. Whatever.
And Sloane says, but you were a hero. You stood up to the draft. And then Leonard in his brain says, does she really believe that? Really? And then we cut back to old time Leonard. And he's in the airport. And he says he has all the money in his pocket to buy that house in Vermont. And he used it to switch flights. And instead of flying to where he's supposed to go, Vermont, he ends up flying to his old hometown, basically. Then we get a black and white footage of Leonard in, like, modern day, being convinced to do this project in the first place. So a lot of, like, black and white footage. They're all flashbacks, but they all are of different times in his life, basically. Yeah.
They're almost like literally use of
little
vignettes.
They are. They're not.
Well,
scenes.
I feel like the other parts are with that you say are shot on film or look like they're shot on film.
Yeah,
are almost like a continuous storyline of like a second like version of him, while everything else is like vignettes that kind of patch in everything.
After I'm done with my app, I might look and see if they've actually been shot on film. Leonard met Amy when she was 18 years old, married her 4 months later instead of going to Cuba, which is where he wanted to go. He wanted to go to Cuba
just for fun.
No, it's because he was just
big
like
Castro fan.
Yeah, big time fan of Castro and communism.
Cigars. Yeah, I love it.
Big
yeah.
fan of the. It's a funny end, actually. It's a funny thing because he goes when he's having the cigar. He has the cigar with his, you know, his father-in-law. That's interesting.
It was like Fidel Castro.
Yeah. So they have a daughter named Heidi because that's Amy's favorite book growing up.
Okay.
And wrote down, Leonard is young and stupid and opinionated. And it's like such a real vibe when you're like, I mean, for me, when you're like young and you're just like, you hate everything for like no reason, but you could never do anything compared to the things that you're hating.
Yeah.
So he's just hating in like brilliant masterpieces, and he's just like, this doesn't fucking mean anything. And it's like, what the fuck are you doing, dude?
Yeah.
What
are you making over here, buddy?
Yeah. And so then there's this really great quote where he's like yelling and screaming at his wife, Amy. Mm-hmm. And then old Leonard's narration comes in and it says, who knows how to define love when you haven't loved anyone in your life? And then young Leonard says, I love you, Amy. And it's like the realest Damn. Shit in the world where it's like,
when you're an adult, you're when you're old, like reflecting back, it's like, oh man,
I didn't know what the fuck I was saying.
Yeah,
and it's like Jacob Elordi does such a good job of like portraying someone who thinks they know what love is. I don't know, man. Everyone's doing such a good fucking job here, and he's like, I love you, Amy. I love you. And then Amy's like, fucking just leave. I don't know what he did to her, but she's just like, just get out of here. So he ends up leaving, and he goes to a party, and he has a pretentious conversation with a bunch of artists there, including Stanley, who's a painter. Does he come into play later? He's got a big beard.
Stanley's a painter. Yes, he does come play later.
Okay.
Yes.
And so he's just like, I'm trying to write. I'm just waiting for everything to fall into place. And they're having like this really pretentious conversation about like the meaning of art and all that. And then this woman, Amanda, shows up. Amanda likes his writing, is a jazz pianist, and he ends up having sex with her. Okay. Even though he's still currently married to Amy.
Yeah, well.
And he's like, I hoped if I had sex with her that I'd fall in love with her. But we only made love the one time. And he says, no consequences because Amy never found out. And then Emma, his current wife, is like, we have to stop this right now. She's like, I want to stop this filming. This isn't right. You're manipulating him. These cannot be real. These can't be truths. He's literally just talking.
I know.
About
I'm like,
his
he's
life.
Just going. He's just fucking going on his own thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You're manipulating him. You put cameras in front of him. He's gonna say anything.
He's gonna say whatever.
He's gonna dance like a monkey, like a Curious George.
Like Curious George.
With no tail.
Who's not a monkey?
Who's not a monkey? He's a chimp, but that's okay.
But Leonard's like, I got awards and made a career getting the truth out of people, but I never got the truth out of myself. So that's what this is all about. So we cut to black and white, and Emma, it's back when Leonard's still teaching, and Emma meets Leonard, and he's teaching photography and documentarianism and all that, and photojournalism, and he shows them that photo, that very famous photo from Vietnam of the guy with the gun to his head.
The guy shooting the kid?
The guy shooting the well, not the kid. It was like a full-grown man.
Oh, yeah. Shoot him in the head, right?
Yeah. He shows him that. He says, these men will never die. As long as this photo is around, they will never die.
I was in my photojournalism class as well.
But then Emma says, no, they won't go on living forever. They'll be dying forever.
Damn.
Yeah. Okay. Pretty cruel.
Yeah.
And then Emma, Sloane confronts Emma. Sloane is a weird character. Because then they cut to like modern day again. And Sloane is like, how did you not know that your husband was like this? And I'm like,
Sloane's the lady, like the lady with the
hair,
right?
The young lady with the hair.
She's barely, it's so weird. She's so quiet in my half.
Yeah, in my half, she's just like, Emma, how did you not know that your husband did this? And I'm like, what the fuck? Fuck you. Like, you don't know me.
Yeah.
And
it's like, he was like a super adult. He was like in his 40s.
Yeah, he was already old. She's like way younger than him.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. So, and then he's like, interview. So basically, like, they're talking about the process in which they're making this. This is actually something that is a real documentarian process, which I believe the guy who made The Thin Blue Line, Errol Morris.
Mm-hmm.
Errol Morris, a great documentarian. He does this thing where he points a camera directly at the person he's talking to, and then he sits off the camera, but he has like it's sort of like what they do for news broadcasts, where he's looking at a camera that's like a mirror, and then that camera points into the lens that the person is being interviewed. So it looks like they're talking to someone rather than talking directly to a camera.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I do know what you're talking about. Yes.
Do you think the audience understands what I'm talking about?
Do you want to do a better job? It's like basically looking at like a teleprompter of someone else's face, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're looking straight into the camera, but
they don't feel like they're looking into a camera.
Yeah, so you can get that kind of more authentic, like I'm looking at a person having a conversation, but yes, they're having a conversation with basically the audience.
Yes, and as the audience, it feels like they're talking to us.
Yeah. I was curious about that because I saw that and I'm like, what's happening here?
That's what it is.
Yeah, okay.
And in this fictional movie world, this was created by Leonard. Like, Leonard's the one that developed this. Okay. But then he's like, I didn't develop it. Freud did this.
Sigmund Freud,
because Sigmund Freud used to, I guess, do stuff like this.
I kind of hate how much Sigmund Freud comes up in just things.
I know.
Like, is everything related? Anytime we're like, we want to get a little deep with something. We want to go, like, make things a little weird.
We know, and a little sexual.
And a little sexual and a little, like... Aren't you really like thinking about someone who's really smart? Sigmund Freud.
Sigmund Freud is the best guy to think about.
Why do we always go to that guy?
Is there nobody else in existence?
There's really no one else? Yeah. Is that the latest thing that everyone knows?
There's no other like incredible, like, you know, therapists or philosophers. Yeah. So, but then Leonard ends up starting, he's like coughing. And then he's like, hey, Malcolm, the guy who is there as the interviewer and the documentarian, he's like, you made a shit documentary about Chernobyl. It had a bunch of inconsistencies. And at first, Malcolm starts, like, laughing. He's just like, oh, this is very funny. But then he's like, you're a fucking fraud, Malcolm. You're a fraud. Okay. And he's like, I don't want to look at you anymore, Malcolm. Put Emma over there. So rather than talking to Malcolm, as feeling like he's being interviewed by Malcolm, now he's talking directly to Emma.
Interesting.
Now Malcolm's like, all right, Leonard, so you made a documentary about Agent Orange. Almost got you arrested. You want to talk about that? And he's like, no. So he goes back to his life story, and he's like, I remember I returned home to Stratford, where I grew up, and I walked into a diner, and this guy knew me, and then black and white cut to Leonard. He returns home to his parents when he was a young boy, and a priest is there, and they're like, Leonard, you're so idealistic, and we understand the world isn't as idealistic as you are, but you can't shirk your responsibilities of college or getting a job or going to war. You have to, like... embrace reality, basically. Mm-hmm. Essentially what like Alicia's father was trying to do, which is like, you need to think about money, you need to think about like the things that matter, you need to make connections. But Leonard is like, no, I don't care about that. And they're like, well, where are you gonna go, like, you know, if you don't go to college or a job or war, what are you gonna do? And he's like, I'm gonna go to Cuba. And so then he goes to his job, where I guess he like sells clothes at a department store, and the guy that runs the department store, he's like, hey man, look, I know that you don't want to go to college, I know you don't want to do all this stuff, but like, I want to help you out, man. It's like, I know you're young and you have all these ideas, but you know, I think you need to go to college. I think you're a brilliant guy and I'm willing to help you out. Like, I can, you know, I know you left college in a huff, but like, I know people there. Like, I can get you like an opportunity there. And he's just like, all right, I'll think about it. And then he's like, all right, Leonard, I trust you. Lock up the department store and happy new year. And while he's alone, Leonard does lock up the department store, but he also steals money from the register. He steals clothes.
Okay.
And then he leaves. And then we cut to modern day. And they're like, so did you ever like go to Cuba? And he's like, no, furthest I got was Florida. And and then we cut to Sloan. And Sloan's like, tell me more about that lady you got pregnant.
Honestly, though.
And then Leonard is like, and he's just like, he starts to start to put this together. And he's like, in his brain, he's like, I have a suspicion. I think that Malcolm, the guy that's doing this documentary, is fucking Sloan. But he's married to Diane, who's this lady that is a full-fledged character, and that's why I've totally brought her up already. But
she's the one with the hat.
She's the one with the hat.
Yeah.
And, Diana is that her name, Diana? Diana? I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
She's basically married to Malcolm, but Malcolm is fucking Sloan. And then and he's just like, I know that Malcolm is... not talented, and Leonard's saying this. He's like, I know that Diana is the talented one, and I know this because I seduced Diana. And we cut to the black and white footage of Leonard talking to Diana as a student, and sort of just going like, "Oh my god, you're so brilliant." And Diana's like, "Oh, I don't know about that." Blah blah blah. And that's the end of my half of the movie.
Okay, so yeah, I wrote on here now from page only know how. Our biography will end. The subject dies.
Oh.
That's how he's like, I'm going to die in this. Like, I'm just going to be fucking dead. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what is happening? What is this movie?
What does that have to do with Canada?
What does this have to do with Canada at all? And he's like, yeah, he'd be nowhere without Diana. I did the same thing when I seduced her. And she's like, he's like, oh yeah, I love this opportunity. It's expiring. I'm like, I don't know who fucking Diana is. I thought it was Emma for a while.
Oh yeah.
So this is like in his own mind. It doesn't feel like he actually explains this then.
No, this is all narrated. He's not telling anything.
So do you think the black and white is kind of like his own thoughts?
This is the thing I think he's keeping private from everyone
else.
Yes,
but we're telling us, the audience. But in terms of like, then he narrates the story based on like kind of the things that are shot in color and in film.
I think that's probably right, yeah. Okay. Good okay. filmmaking, Mr. Schrader.
Interesting. Let's see. Emma's like talking about, it gets a little confusing because I'm just like,
it gets very confusing.
I didn't know what things were real, what things weren't. Let's see, like some guy named Nick feels guilty, so he goes and confesses to a priest. The priest calls the cops. We go home. I was never the same.
Okay, really quick. Nick, I think, is his boss.
Oh, okay.
And so the boss goes to the priest and says, like, hey, I think this kid that works for me stole a bunch of stuff from my store.
Okay, yeah. That makes sense. Guys heard this, and I'm like, okay, that doesn't really matter, but I wrote down anyway.
Yeah, I'm glad you did.
Emma says, I'm not the one who's sick. It's the meds that's messing with your mind, darling. You need to focus and figure out what's going on. Maybe we'll take a break. Why don't we try taking a break and doing this again when you're better? Mm. And he looks at her and says, like, when I'm better? We know that's not happening.
Oh.
We know it's not happening.
Is he just old or is he dying from something?
He's got fucking cancer, bro.
He's lost all his hair.
That's why he's lost everything. Yeah, because a lot of times in the flashbacks, or in the black and whites, you see him and he has kind of like a full head of hair. But now he's kind of, it's like shaved.
Yeah. Well, it's falling out.
It's falling out,
yeah. It's thinning.
It's thinning like a lot. Like so much so that it's very short. Let's see. So they eventually go, they take a break. He gets wheeled away. He has to have help from the nurse to get him on the toilet. And she's like, call me when you're ready to wipe. And I'm like, should have got a fucking bidet, dude. They don't have those in
Big
Canada.
Fucking hot shot can't get a bidet.
Can't get a bidet.
In Canada.
And he's like, what's left of me is my brain. When all you have is no future left. All you have is thinking about the past. Oh. And I was like, damn, there's a lot of writing in here that's just like, I'm thinking about what's like that.
Yep.
And he's like, I can't exist except as a fictional character because I made so many lies up. I want to come through with the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Diana asks, why are you doing this? And he says, I want to confess that I'm a coward and I never loved anyone ever.
Damn.
And everything in this moment's color here, I note. Mm-hmm. They get the test results. It cuts back to him and I think it's Emma. He's like, test results, it's cancer. And she's like, what kind? She asks. And he says, not the good kind. And I'm like, All right. This is a little
it's
much.
It's the bad kind of cancer.
It's the bad cancer.
Yeah.
And he's like, happy holidays. He's getting wheeled back now to do the interview.
Yeah.
And it's Christmas time, so they have the Christmas tree. He's like, it's happy holidays. You know, Strong and Freud died during the holidays. How can so much suffering have no meaning?
Who?
Some guy named, I think it was Strong, I wrote. Strong?
Sigmund Freud?
And Sigmund Freud.
Oh, okay.
Like
okay,
two
okay.
different people.
Got it. A lot of this movie takes place around the holidays.
Yeah, and he's like, they died during the holidays.
It's a Christmas movie.
How could so much suffering happen and there's no meaning?
Oh.
It's like, all right.
Christmas time
is here.
It's here.
And he goes in the interview. He says, I know you think this is a fiction, but I don't care what you think. You can do what you want with my story when you're done. You can cut it up, edit it. I don't care, but I'm going to tell it. And you're going to have witness of me telling my wife about the man she was married to. Flashback. I cut to, he's like, I make documentaries, but you have people skills. This is him kind of talking to Emma, seducing her. Mm. And Emma's like, please, let's... He's like, no more taking a break. Keep the lights down. Let's keep this going.
Oh.
And we cut to this place called Feely's Pharmacy. He gets a map. He's trying to drive to Montpellier.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I took the US 4 north. And he got lost. He was confused where he was. He got lost in the mist. And he's like, then he gets confused about where he's at. And the story-wise, he's like, you guys want to talk about that Agent Orange movie or whatever? And they're like, yeah, well, it was a fluke. After I arrived in Canada, I met a guy from Oklahoma named Ralph Denise. And this is when I finally recognized that young guy was Jacob Elordi. And I was Jacob Elordi. And he's like, yeah,
he was wearing a mustache. So it's pretty hard to just
pretty hard to figure it out. But basically, he found like a job with this guy on a farm in New Brunswick, and he was just like getting his camera and just like filming these kind of like crop dustings that were going on, and he's gonna set a psychedelic montage.
With that, exactly.
Yeah. But with a plane farting. But it turns out it was a secret military test for Agent Orange.
Oh.
And then at that point, he became a documentary filmmaker. When he started putting that out as like a thing. This is his little thing. I can't remember what the actual film was called. I should have wrote that down. But then he became a good documentary filmmaker. And we see cuts of other films he made about like the tragedies that happened to Native people in Canada. Mm. And then there was clubbing of seals and all that stuff. And then he goes, wait a minute, what the hell's going on? No one's here. And he looks around, the room is empty. He's like, I'm going to sound like a madman. And they're like, oh, Malcolm's just in the bathroom.
Oh.
He's like, oh, okay. Anyway, so he's like, I rented a car in the airport. I got a teaching gig. I'm going to stay at this painter guy's house. What was his name again? Stanley.
Mm-hmm.
Stanley. He's going to stay at Stanley's house.
Yeah, Stanley's
house.
He has
a wife there named Gloria. He's like, I'm going to stay there for a bit. I believe this is across the Canadian border already.
Oh, so they've already crossed into Canada.
Or maybe they haven't yet. I think it's by the border. No, it's by the border of it. It's by the border of it.
Okay, so Detroit.
I think you might be right, yes. There's a lot of places that border Canada.
There's a lot of places. There is.
So he goes to the farm, shows him all these new paintings and kind of like his little farmhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah. You know, Stanley's like, I hit a bit of a rough patch. And he's like, oh, how's Gloria? And how's she doing? He's like, I don't know. She's probably inside sleeping. I tried to get her to go to a shrink, but she's a masochist, man. The more she hates me, and like just living in general, the happier she becomes.
What?
I don't know. That's what he said. And then he's like, you know, I thought she had a lover and she laughed in my face because I thought like maybe she was cheating on me. So I went down to Plainsfield where I teach and I laid one of my students. And
damn.
It fucking Leo's here, little Jacob Elordi. He's like, oh, this is kind of a lot, dude.
Yeah.
He's like, you can't keep going on like this. He's like, you know, and he's like, what about all the students you've been counseling about abandoning the draft? And he's like, you know, the border's so close, they can all just walk over. You know, I think I'm going to try moving to, what is he going to say? It was like, not Vermont. I think it was like, he's moving to another state. It didn't matter. He was trying to move away, basically, and get away from where he was.
Right.
And he basically is like, well, you're going to abandon all of us, including like me and Alicia. We're going to try to like move there and you're going to just try to like get rid of it. He's like, no, it's going to be fine. Then Gloria appears and is like, hey, I got a phone call from Alicia's mom.
He's like, oh, what? Shit.
He's like, what do you mean? So he goes and calls her back on the phone and he's like, it said something happened to Cornell. I wrote that down, but then it said he's fine. Then she's like, what's actually wrong? It's like, well, Alicia miscarried this afternoon. The girl that was going to come out was malformed, so it wasn't going to be good anyway. But Alicia's okay, so it is probably a blessing is what the mom says. Like, this happened, I guess. But he's like, should I come over? She's like, you don't have to come over. You don't have to come over. It's fine. We got it all taken care of here. And it makes me think like, okay, sounds like, I mean, now that I realize the beginning, sounds like they didn't want him over there anyway.
Yeah, they don't really care for him.
So it doesn't sound like he's not really wanted here in the States.
No.
Is what it seems like at this
or at least not by this family.
No. Not at all. And then we get another voice, and I'm like, who the hell is this other voice? And it says, I'm gonna try to find my dad. And I'm like, okay, is this like Leo trying to look for his dad?
No,
this is Cornell.
Cornell.
He's like, my mom never spoke of him. And we're going to go drive over to it. So he's like, it's easy to find because
it's
very
public.
Is this
the guy that's in SALT? He's the CIA agent from SALT?
This is the CIA agent from SALT.
Oh, okay, yeah, cool. Good to know.
Cornell's doing that.
All right.
And they goes and watches a movie called Suffer the Innocents, which is basically about like a bishop, sexual abuse scandal, stuff like that.
Mm.
It's kind of funny. They just pick like the most like generic, like what's a big important
document,
a big important documentary that happens.
And yeah,
we're gonna a big news event. We're gonna make a documentary about.
Boom.
And they're mentioning kind of because this is like a film screening, and he was gonna go talk about it, like one of his older films. So it's older Richard Gere comes out, and they're like, "Oh, thank you for this. We thought it was really amazing that like you never like when the judge announced like you were guilty, and some guy came in, some kid or said you were innocent, and some kid comes in and is just like, you fucked my life, you ruined my whole life." And the film zooms in just on the bishop's face.
Not
then seeing the guilt and the judge is talking, everyone's talking, but they thought it was really cool that he just stayed on that face the whole time.
Didn't move anywhere else.
It's very important. Then the movie ends and he comes out and we see the production credit was him and Emma.
Oh.
So she's been doing all this production stuff, which is interesting because it makes me think that like, this is very similar to the current documentarian that's doing his own thing.
Yes, 100%.
Right? Like
he's not as talented.
Is what is kind of coming down. Because in some ways, he even admits like the Agent Orange thing was kind of an accident.
Yeah, it's all a fluke.
That happened.
I will say, though, I feel like this is kind of a thing as someone who probably suffers from this as well. Is like, it feels a bit like, I had nothing to do with that. It's like, well, nobody else was doing it.
Yeah.
You did it.
Well, now he literally has a person on the credit score. So it's like, well, I didn't do anything.
That is different. But I'm like, the Agent Orange thing, it's like, yeah, you fell into a situation where you could make a documentary.
Yeah.
It's like, nobody else was shooting this.
No one else is making a documentary at this time.
Yeah.
So then let's see, Cornell appears and he's like, goes up, meets him after the movie, and he's like, hi, dad, that's a good job. And he's
shit.
What who are you talking about?
You fucking idiot.
Yeah.
He's like,
I'm your son. And Emma's like, oh yeah, it's Alicia's son. And he's like, oh, okay. He's like, huh. I don't have a son. And never talk to me again. And he
Whoa!
Leaves. But then Emma makes a signal like, hey, call me. And so she goes and meets with Cornell in like a diner.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, are you married? And he's like, yeah, I'm married. You know, I work as a UVA administrator. Like, he's like, did your mom ever talk about this at all? It's like, no, but did he never tell you, Emma, about me at all? She's like,
got it.
No.
Did he never tell you, Emma, about me at all? Got it. Okay.
Yes.
I'm putting this all together.
I know. he's like, she says, no, he never told me directly, but I kind of knew in a fashion.
Mm-hmm. Figured it out.
And he's like, sorry you had to see all that with the ugliness of it. And it's like, we have a great marriage. Like, he's very faithful to me and I love him.
Woo!
I know.
They love each other.
He's like, will you tell him about our little talk here?
Mm-hmm.
She's like, we'll see how that goes. So I don't know if she ever told her about that.
Probably not.
It's coming up in this documentary, but also it was like you said, like this is kind of almost a meta documentary on the documentary.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
A lot. Richard Gere is also, so earlier that moment he got a map earlier when he was describing it, he was in a cafe, he was looking at the map and he turned and the lights kind of like opened up and it was like God came in through the door.
Ooh.
But now, it's Richard Gere there, and the same scene happens, and the lights open, and God comes to the door. But it's just a flashback, a bunch of old people.
That's
like,
cool.
Like, not old people, but people in, like, older outfits, like, from when he was younger, coming in and sitting at the bar.
Oh, I see what you mean. Old people.
Not actual old people, but people from the past.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we cut to the interview chair, and he's sleeping.
Shitting himself.
Emma's like, are you sure he's sleeping, or is he dead? And I'm like, no. So they go check it out. And then we got the interview from Cornell, and he's like, all energy starts at one point and then explodes. And cancer is the same way, eventually devouring the whole body. And like Emma's like yelling because he's like asleep now.
Yeah.
And he's yelling at the director of the
documentary
now. And
Malcolm.
Like you did this. You're a sicko. And he's like, we have a contract with the CBC. She's like, you need to stop this. This is ridiculous. He's like, he wanted to do this. And
yeah.
Like, he did want to do this.
He did.
And then Jacob Elordi's back, cut back to him. And he is in the house of the painter guy still. And he's sitting by the fire in the little cot that he has.
Mm-hmm.
And Gloria comes down and brings him a blanket. And Gloria is also played by Uma Thurman.
Oh.
And she's like, I brought you an extra blanket because like when it gets cold here, the fire goes out and it gets cold. And he's like, oh, do you like, is there other wood I can use? She's like, yeah, it's right here. And then he literally just goes straight to the point and says, Gloria, are you going to leave Stanley? She's like, yeah, probably. He's like, for another man? He's like, no, for another life. And he says, cheers to that. Here's to another life. Here's to a new life. And then she fucking kisses him. And then they bang? Question mark? Because it's like a weird hand job situation. I don't know the position.
Oh, she strokes him off.
It's dark. It's hard to tell what's going on. There's some
Canada.
Sexual stuff going on. There's some, let's just say, unfaithful things happening.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, that doesn't sound good.
Leo's just like wakes up. He's like, I just want this pain to end. The cancer's appetite. I was having so many new and wonderful thoughts though, And then Emma's like, all right, we're done. Pack this up. Let's get out of here. So they all start packing up their stuff for the interview, trying to leave. And the director tells, Diana? Who's the younger one?
Sloan.
She tells Sloan, like, take this little camera and get it into that room where he's going to be in.
Ooh.
And I was like, what the fuck? So they pack up everything, and she goes up there, and she says, hey, we're packing up and leaving. You guys need anything else? She says, and Emma's like, no, get out of here. She's like, okay. And then she takes this little tiny camera, puts it on the bookshelf, and it's got this bright, glowing red light. Yeah. I'm like, how does no one see
Nobody's noticing the big red light.
I guess at this moment,
she's got other things to
worry
about.
Richard Gere's fucking dying or whatever. So the nurse is like, let's give him a fentanyl patch. Mm. And he's like, okay. And we cut to Jacob Elordi, a flashback of him leaving. He's going to drive away. He says, what did I not do that Stanley and Nick do? He's like, they both served. I didn't.
Oh.
And then we cut to him actually in the military draft zone.
Office?
I think we've all seen. It's not really an office. It's like they're kind of in like a school gym. And they're like, everyone's stripped down in their underwear and they're kind of being examined.
Sure.
And he's sitting there and he goes in with the jock strap and it says like peace and love on it. And this guy comes out and he's like, we need to go talk to you in private. So the officer takes him back into private and is like, gives him some information. He's like, I have your file here. And Jacob Mullard, he's like, he's kind of acting gay. He's kind of trying to be effeminate.
Sure,
trying to dodge
the
trap.
Right.
And he's like, okay, it's your birthday. I want to make sure you're there. And throughout this whole thing where he's just kind of acting dumb and just like, oh, that's... why do you need my birthday? It's in the file. He's like, I'm trying to make sure it's your right file, says, you idiot. And he's like, Mr. Fife, are you a homosexual? And he's like, no.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, well, you're getting called number one. So that means if we ever do some big mobilization, you'll get called, but you're going to be called for a while. So here's your draft card will arrive in a few days.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, okay, thank you. And then a little bit later, or in like not black and white, but in
color, but film,
but
color,
still old. He gets, yeah, it's hard to explain. He's driving and he gets to a border that literally says, or a fork of the road that literally says Massachusetts or Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all like going to Canada. And then the Canadian national anthem plays.
Oh, Canada.
And then meanwhile, in film decides to show the documentary crew sitting in a van and they got the video footage of Richard Gere literally dying.
Whoa!
And it narrates it. I believe this is Concord or whatever his name is. Conrad. Yeah, Conrad.
Not Conrad.
Conrad. He's
with his son.
His son is saying like it felt like he was being pulled into a black hole, standing at the borderline between
Cornell,
whatever. Standing at a borderline between past and present, his body twitched as a shake off a fallen leaf or a feather, and it's trying to be like, his choice of life or death is between going to Massachusetts or Canada. And just like that, his body is choosing between life or death. These are big life changes. So he in the past goes to Canada and he in the present fucking dies.
Dies, yeah.
And
big life change.
Big life change. But Jacob Elordi is basically at the Canadian border. He then dramatically gets out of his car and goes to literally the border and then start singing Oh Canada. And literally when he says that, he jumps the border, and also it cuts to
him
Richard
dying.
Gere's last words being Oh Canada.
Oh shit.
And then that's it.
That's the name of the movie.
That's the end of the movie. You see him go to Canada, the national anthem plays. It's got him singing. And the movie's dedicated to Russell Banks, who is someone who wrote a lot of novels about small guys doing small things, marginalized people usually.
How'd you know this?
Because it said in the end. It said,
oh,
I looked
okay.
It up.
I thought you like okay.
Well,
okay,
I mean,
okay.
I looked up Russell Banks. I was like, who is that guy? But he died, I think.
He's also the guy who wrote, I think,
wrote a few movies, I think, too.
He wrote this. No. He wrote the book that this was based off of.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
There you go.
But yeah, I don't know. It just got
kind of... Yeah, I don't know about that ending.
It just got a little too, like, on the nose. I don't know.
Yeah.
It felt very, very much like, do you understand the metaphor I'm going for here?
It's pretty
it feels,
clear,
it
yeah.
feels like art school, kind of like, do you understand, guys?
I need to make it more obvious.
I need to make it real obvious
yeah.
what's going on here. And it was just like, okay, I get it. I yeah. don't know. And the fact that maybe it was because I was in the second half and it was a little incoherent when he started to get closer to death, which yeah. makes sense. It was a little harder to grasp what was going on and made it not the most fun watch experience.
I will also say, as someone who saw the first half and now hearing the second half, I do kind of feel like it was, because I really fucking loved that first half because it was so like naturalistic and like interesting and thoughtful and mm-hmm. like things were sort of like brought up, but not.
There
like,
was some interesting like notes and interesting observations in life. And like you said, it felt a lot like the director was just kind of talking directly to the camera, director and writer, because he wrote both of these.
He wrote, yeah.
Directly to like his own thoughts and yeah. kind of reflecting on things.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of felt like, okay, grandpa, it's time to go to bed. You know, like we need to chill out here. But
I mean, maybe I'd appreciate this movie if I was older or if I was in a different part of stage of my life.
Yeah. Like, but it definitely feels yeah. like a sad old man movie, but I don't think it's doing anything particularly insightful or new is what I would say. Like, yeah. I don't think any of these thoughts I haven't seen in another movie. That's why I kind of felt like I was watching like, the father.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, it feels like the same vein, but it's not doing anything particularly unique. Like, at least in, you know.
The father
had a very unique perspective in the way it was filmed and everything. Yeah, and just kind of the last few hours was a very specific time. But this movie was very unfocused.
Yeah.
Like, they had a framing device, but they still were like, that's not enough. We got to still show you the black and white scenes where he's not telling the camera.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of, to me, it felt all over the place and wasn't really the most compelling thing to watch. It felt like I was doing work to watch it, but not getting any reward out of it.
I was kind of hoping in the end, too, that it would result in, because he was like, oh, my God, like, I've got to confess. And I'm like, well, what the fuck is he going to confess? Like, yeah, it sucks that he like was a womanizer and a shithead, but yeah. like he was like 20, like, you know, like.
But you still, I mean, the idea is probably he has that guilt still from being a kid, right?
Yeah,
like,
I suppose.
He still has those things being a bad person.
But then at the same time, like Emma's like, I don't want to talk about this anymore. I don't want to hear about this. And it's like, well, he's fucking a child. Like he's 20 years old. Like, I don't know. Like, it's weird that this is so like still dramatic. I thought this was going to be him revealing like, I did not dodge the draft. I was not drafted.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that's where this was going, was he's like, he acted like he was some big resistor, but he was never actually going to be put in that kind of position.
He just bailed. He delayed his draft a little bit, but yeah. it wasn't really like a huge resistance thing. He just acted like he was gay. So they're like, we're going to delay your draft. And then he's like, okay, cool. And then he just pieced out of the country.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which is like, is that really a brave thing to do, or is it just like, I just don't want to do a draft? Like, it's not really resisting as much.
Is it cowardly, as he says?
Yeah. So he's like, I'm a coward. I don't know. It just felt like it was going for a lot, and I don't think any of it really landed, and it just felt very unfocused, kind of like the story he was telling.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also looked it up. It was not shot on film. It was all shot digitally and then edited to look like
film.
That
makes sense.
But they still did a very good job.
Yeah, it was a great job. I mean, we both love the game Immortality, and that was all shot digitally.
Yes,
but they
exactly
just they
right.
did just did a lot of
filters and all that stuff,
yeah, which can be done. It's great.
And it was very well done. I thought the movie overall was shot very well. Acting is fantastic. I thought Richard Gere was incredible in this.
Richard Gere was really good.
I think the acting was really good. Gives Hachi a run for its money, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
But yeah, no, I thought it was good. It's not great.
I think it was mid. I think it was mid as fuck.
Yeah.
I think it was.
But you know why?
Because
this wasn't directed by a Canadian.
Yeah, you're right. This isn't the most Canadian movie. It's just set in Canada.
Barely, too.
Barely, right. Like, I honestly, for a while, it took me a while to remember that the painter lived in America still.
Yeah.
And he was just on the border of Canada.
Exactly.
So it was like, oh, cool. So you're literally just going to, like, barely leave at that point.
Guys, I'm sorry that we included this in our Canada month. We just assumed it had more to do with Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you guys, do anybody here live in Canada? Anybody who listens to us live in Canada?
Yeah,
email us at emailtheelaira@podcast.com. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram. We're also on Discord and Blue Sky. And if you want to listen to our previous episodes or check out our future Canada episodes, you can find them on any podcatching app. And while you're there, please leave a 5-star rating and review. We will read it on the show no matter what it says, even if your review is very, you know, muddled and, you know, meandering and doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, and you shit yourself at the end. We'll read it. We'll read it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think for me, I was just hoping for more Canada business.
I agree.
I think there was just, besides the name, which felt very Canadian.
It's literally O Canada.
But I guess that was maybe they were trying to frame it as like, oh, Canada is like, oh, death, oh, I'm escaping, oh, I'm leaving this mortal realm, I'm starting a new life, because that was what Gloria was doing. She's like, I'm leaving this guy to start a new life.
So is him going to Canada, like, does he actually spend any time in Canada?
Yeah, no, there's some scenes in Canada, right, where he was talking about, like, I shot the Agent Orange thing
Right.
So there was some
scenes,
but
not very much.
Not a lot, which is... I think I was misled.
I feel like I was lied to.
Paul Schrader, you son of a gun.
You son of a gun, you did it again. Good night, everybody.
There wasn't any driving of taxi.
Wait, that's not true. Would you guys like to discuss the movies that we talked about on the podcast, recommend movies for future episodes, or maybe even watch movies with us? Check out the Discord.
You can find the Discord on the latest episodes or on the website, theotherhalfpodcast.com. We're just hanging out chatting.
And while you're there, maybe also check out the second of the Discord, which is specifically for Ethan's streams on Twitch. You get updates as to when he goes live. Just keep up to date with us, with Ethan, the podcast, and the stream.
It's also totally okay if you just want to hang out and talk about the podcast. You could hang out there and maybe we'll see you there and watch a movie or something.
Or maybe you're like, wow, these streams are so much better, and you just totally ignore the podcast. That's also another option.
That could happen.
Why not?
The Discord is your oyster. Come join us.
The Discord is your oyster. Join it.